Okay, we're going to start our meeting. Sorry about no chairs, but we're working. Are we working on getting any additional chairs? John?
This is it.
All right. All right, this is obviously a very... Thank you. Yeah, thank you. Sarah, are you coming back here?
Yeah.
Okay. We got one extra chair, so feel free to come on up and use it. Hopefully this won't take too long, get an hour. So I apologize for the standing room, and I know how important this meeting is. So thank you for all being here. We had an earlier meeting, so we've already taken our roll call, so we just recessed. Now we're back into our same Committee of the Whole meeting. So welcome to the Committee of the Whole meeting for the Village of River Forest in June 24th at 6 o'clock. We are going to talk about our DEER and DEER programs. We have had invited guests from the Illinois Department of Natural Resources to give a presentation. And I think the way the format will work is that he'll give us a presentation. Hopefully he'll answer some, if not most, of your questions. Then we will talk a little bit about what the village has been talking to and planning with the Illinois Department of Natural Resources, as well as the Forest Preserve and the U.S. Department of Agriculture. And then if there's some real, you know, pressing question that or hasn't been addressed or something that you think we should address, I will take questions as well. So, but I'd ask that we finish up the presentation and any questions that the trustees have and any conversation or information that the staff provides, and then I'll open it up for questions, okay? So it gets us in a kind of a flow. So with that, I'm going to invite Tim to the podium. Welcome to the Village of River Forest.
Thank you. My name is Tim Pruce. I'm the urban deer biologist for the Illinois Department of Natural Resources. I was invited to come here today to talk with y'all a little bit about deer. Primarily, I'll be talking about kind of the history of deer, deer biology, and certain things that homeowners can do to reduce damage on their properties that they may be experiencing from deer. I was also asked to talk about other nuisance wildlife species, but in order to try to juggle all of that in a limited amount of time, my presentation is primarily just going to focus on deer. I was asked to leave a lot of time for questions, so my presentation will be about 30 minutes, and then there will be plenty of time for questions afterwards, during which time there will be some slides that'll loop through on the screen that'll give some basic tips for avoiding conflicts with certain species that are common, maybe nuisance-ish animals. So in order to kind of set the context for our present situation with deer, I think it's beneficial to kind of take a look back at the history of deer in Illinois. And so when we go back prior to European settlement, deer were abundant. They were in balance with the habitat. And primarily, you know, Native Americans at that time likely harvested 20 to 30% of the deer population every year. And so they used those for food and clothing, tools. There were also more predators at that time, like gray wolves and mountain lions. And then during the 1700s, Europeans began coming into the area, which started causing some changes in the deer population. On the graphic on the screen, there's a figure, you know, on the lower right-hand side, and that's going to kind of track as I go through the different time periods. That'll kind of track the deer population as we progress. And so during the early 1800s, deer numbers were higher than they were previously. This was in part to, you know, as Europeans began to settle the area, there were predator eradication programs, and so some of the predators that had preyed on deer, you know, were removed. Native American populations began to decrease. And as some of the land began getting converted for agricultural use, it created edge habitat, which is really quality habitat for deer. And so during that time, we started to see deer populations increase in numbers. In the 1800s, 1809, the territory of Illinois was created. In 1818, Illinois became a state, which then became more of an attractant for, you know, additional immigrants to come to the area, you know, both from Europe as well as the eastern United States. During the mid-1800s, as you know, there was an increase in settlement, clearing of land increased substantially. And so what at one time, you know, where the clearing, you know, created good habitat, now even the edges were being wiped out for agricultural purposes, which then, you know, further reduced habitat for deer. There was also market hunting at that time, and so people could hunt deer and then sell their meat, sell their hides. So there was a financial incentive for folks to harvest deer. And there was no regulated hunting season like we have today. So there were no bag limits, no time restrictions. So basically deer could be harvested year round without any limit. And so deer numbers declined substantially. During the late 1800s, deer were almost extinct from the state of Illinois. It's something that we don't think about very often, given, you know, how common deer are today. But there was a time when deer were virtually extinct from the state. And so the state of Illinois responded with some legislation to protect deer. In 1901, basically a ban on deer hunting was put in place. In 1912, what's believed to be the last native deer in Illinois was observed in southern Illinois. There were likely some small pockets of deer remaining in the state, but by and large, they were not seen on any sort of regular basis. And so in the mid-1900s, there was continued protection for deer from harvest. The rebuilding of the deer herd began through the State Conservation Department, and so there were captive deer that were raised in pens, you know, to reproduce, and then they were released throughout the area. You know, when deer could be found, you know, deer were translocated from certain areas in the state to other areas in the state. Back at that time, it was really common for, you know, folks to keep deer as, you know, to capture deer and keep them as animals, and so there were a fair number of instances where, either from, you know, storms that, you know, damaged fencing, but captive populations of deer escaped and helped to repopulate much of the state of Illinois. And so deer numbers began to increase because of those things. By the time of 1957, the deer population was stable enough where the state opened up its first modern hunting season. It was open in 33 counties. There's 102 total counties in Illinois. And so at that time, 33 counties were open to hunting, primarily in southern Illinois. And only 1,913 deer were harvested during that first season. I'll give you some current stats as we get a little bit further. But in essence, very few deer were harvested because the population was still very small. During the late 1900s, deer increased statewide. And so by 1976, essentially every county at that point was opened up to deer hunting in one form or another. The majority of counties were open to both archery and firearm hunting. The counties of Cook, DuPage, Kane, and Lake were archery only hunting. In 1980, approximately 20-some thousand deer were harvested during that season. So, and then as we move into the 2000s, in 2002, chronic wasting disease was discovered for the first time in Illinois along the Winnebago and Boone County line. That's kind of another issue that could make for a really long presentation, so I'm not going to address that today. Unless there are specific questions about it later. So as we get to the 2005-2006 hunting season, over 200,000 deer were harvested at that time. So you go from 1980, where about 20,000 deer were harvested, and just 25 years later, over 200,000 deer were harvested during the regular hunting season. And so at the present time, approximately 150,000 deer are harvested throughout the state each year during the hunting season. But in areas where hunting is limited or restricted, we do see, deer numbers continue to increase and issues associated, in urban areas, damage complaints and deer vehicle accidents. We tend to see issues associated with deer. And so that brings us up to the present. And so when we start to look at deer, as a whole, one of the things that we want to look at is what's their purpose? What's their ecological role? So in native environments, deer serve, primarily as they're plant eaters. They consume plants. That helps. So that serves a number of purposes. It helps to aid in seed dispersal. So in natural areas, it helps, continue to promote, the natural plant communities. Deer also serve as prey for other animals. Here, not so much. Coyote will prey on some fawns, but otherwise, predators are pretty limited in this area. But where a predator complex is intact, like we talked about earlier, gray wolves and mountain lions, serve as predators for deer. But the impacts associated with deer change as their populations change. And so healthy populations that are in balance with the ecosystem, in those situations, deer maintain the plant communities. And so they prevent certain species from becoming over-dominant, and allow others to be released, and become more prevalent in the community. When deer become overabundant, then there are issues associated with, deer causing, damage and habitat loss for other species. So species that may be, ground nesting birds, as the understory vegetation, gets, eaten and consumed by deer, nesting habitats for oven birds and wood thrushes, and certain habitat for salamanders, disappears. And so, the task of most conservation agencies and for us, the Department of Natural Resources, is to try to maintain, a balance in the deer populations throughout the state. So in urban areas, how do deer become overabundant? And so there's a combination of factors that contribute to this. One, in the absence of predation or other population controls, deer are very long-lived. And so in urban areas, they can live sometimes 10 to 15 years. And the females, can begin producing as early as their first year. So you have a very productive, possibility for, prolific, reproduction. Deer are also very adaptable in terms of their preferences for food. Their food preferences, which we'll get into more detail about here in a little bit, change seasonally. And so they're not, just consuming one thing. They adapt, over time, and as some vegetation becomes more limited, they'll adapt and take advantage of other vegetation that's available. Their behavior that also changes seasonally, and we'll talk a little bit more in detail about that here in a little bit, which contribute to their ability to become more overabundant in these areas. There's also limited predation in urban areas. Primarily deer vehicle accidents. Cars are the primary predator of deer in urban areas. Like I mentioned a little bit ago, coyotes in some circumstances, particularly with fawns, can contribute to predation in those instances, but for the most part, coyotes are not effective at managing or controlling a deer population. Limited or no hunting pressure, which throughout much of the state is used as a management tool to maintain deer populations at certain levels. In most urban situations, it's a very difficult thing to implement a hunting program, although there are municipalities that do that. Habitat. We talked about a little bit about edge habitat, which is kind of those habitat transitions. In urban areas, you tend to have a lot of that. You also have, a lot of, really tasty landscape plants, ornamental plants and vegetable gardens, that deer take advantage of. And, especially in areas like this, you have, natural areas, mixed in with you know, mixed into the urban area, so forest preserves or parks that provide habitat.
One behind you, Tim, is working.
Is that one still working?
Yeah.
So
you can kind of move that, maybe.
So we'll move forward and we'll look at food preferences, which I mentioned, you know, change seasonally. And so we've got, you know, in the winter, you know, primarily acorns, twigs and buds. You know, in our natural areas around here, there aren't very many evergreens. There aren't many native evergreens. And so, you know, in urban areas, you know, lots of, you know, people like to, you know, plant arborvitae and yews, which deer really like. And so, you know, oftentimes if food is limited in the natural areas, they'll move into, you know, the urban areas that are nearby, you know, for some of those resources that are available. We're also, you know, folks that have, you know, feed the birds, you know, bird seed, you know, is an attractant for deer and they'll consume that. You know, there are areas where people illegally feed deer, you know, thinking that, you know, they need, you know, human assistance to make it through the winters. And so they take advantage of all of those types of things. In the spring, they primarily shift over to wildflowers, a lot of the spring ephemerals, you know, that begin coming up in the early spring, as well as any, you know, new growth, you know, green growth that starts to come on, you know, in the spring. In the summer, they continue with wildflowers and additional new growth that's coming in. You know, in some areas, you know, not so much here, but other suburban areas in the Chicago area, there's, you know, agricultural, you know, small farm areas that are close by. And so as, you know, soybeans and corn are planted, deer will utilize those during the summertime. Again, landscaping, vegetable gardens, you know, are sources of food for them. And then in the autumn, you know, the deer begin shifting back to their winter diet. And so again, you know, shifting back towards acorns, you know, twigs and buds. You know, there's usually some, you know, waste corn, you know, in the fields after harvest, you know, as well as, you know, fruits that are ripe during that time. Behavior also varies, you know, seasonally. So in the winter, deer are usually seen and can be found in larger groups. And so, you know, males and females don't really separate themselves at that time, but they form larger groups. The bucks at that time of the year are less aggressive. It's not, you know, the mating season is over at that point. And these larger groups will travel together. In the spring, the groups begin to split up. The does begin to look for fawning areas away from the other groups of deer, and the bucks begin growing antlers at that time. In the summer, the does will essentially chase off any bucks or their own offspring from previous years, so that, you know, they have a secluded time to fawn and raise their fawn. After they're finished fawning, you know, these groups will, you know, get the especially the does, will form back up into groups, and so you'll see larger groups with, you know, just does and their previous offspring as well as their current fawns will group back up together. In the autumn, the bucks go into their rut, so their mating season. At this time, you know, the bucks are more aggressive. There's a lot more movement of the deer, and at this time of year, because, you know, bucks primarily, but even the does as well, will be moving around a lot more. We tend to see an increase in deer vehicle accidents in the autumn. So when we look more specifically at their range and movement patterns, this is one of the key things that, you know, contributes to overabundance of deer in urban areas. So their home range size, especially in urban areas, is less than 2/10 of a square mile. So it's an very small area. And because of that, you know, as they reproduce, you know, especially the females, their young, you know, will stay with them and move just slightly outside of the adult doe's home range. And so you basically have this like rose petal pattern where they just gradually, you know, move out, you know, as their family grows. But because their home ranges are so small, you end up with a lot of deer, you know, clustered in a small area. Deer are primarily active at dawn and dusk, but they can be active at any time of the day or night. They generally follow predictable daily patterns, and the range can shift due to extremes in weather conditions or limited food availability. And so when we look more specifically at the issues associated with overabundant deer, you know, again, if we look at, you know, I mentioned some about some of the ecological damage that deer can cause when they're not in balance with the habitat. You know, so you can have damage to plant and animal communities through, you know, direct, you know, consumption of plants. And that particularly becomes an issue, you know, with, you know, more like threatened or endangered species where you have very small populations where, you know, deer can almost eradicate, you know, those small populations. And loss of habitat for animals, you know, they, you know, can cause, you know, soil compaction and erosion because they have those predictable patterns. And so they, you know, same individuals traveling over the same pathway over and over again, you know, causes that soil to compact, makes it more difficult for, you know, seeds to germinate and plants to grow in those areas. And diseases like chronic wasting disease, you know, in high density populations, those diseases can spread much more rapidly. Other issues like public health and safety, which often are more issues of concern in urban areas. Yeah, we talked about deer vehicle accidents. In Illinois, there's approximately 15,000 deer vehicle accidents per year. You know, approximately 600 injuries associated with those accidents. Fortunately, very few fatalities associated with those, but those do occur at times. Deer on airports, you know, also is an issue at times. Not so much, you know, an issue, you know, for the folks here in River Forest, but in other areas of the Chicago area and throughout the state, you know, have issues with deer on their airports. And then, you know, I mentioned diseases such as chronic wasting disease, which, you know, is a deer disease, but in areas where deer densities are high, you know, that can contribute to transmission of parasites and, you know, such as ticks and tick-borne diseases, and that becomes a concern, you know, for the human population. And then we also have, you know, things like property damage, where you have damage to residential and commercial landscaping. So what's actually the problem? You know, are deer themselves the problem? Well, not really. You know, most people enjoy seeing deer. You know, if it wasn't for some of the problems that can be associated with them, you know, most people would love to have deer around. And so the actual problem is the damage caused by deer. And so the first step when we look at problems like this is to define the actual problem. And so are deer vehicle accidents the problem? Is damage to natural areas the problem? Is it damage to, you know, ornamental landscaping? It, you know, is it something else? Or it's a lot, many times it's a combination of some of those factors. Then it's important to define the scope and scale of the problem. So is it localized to, you know, just a few properties, or is it widespread throughout the entire village or throughout the entire area? And so then after we do that, you know, then, you know, we need to determine how to respond to that problem. You know, what's the most effective way to resolve, you know, the situation, or to at least minimize, you know, the problems that folks are experiencing. And so is the application of, you know, fencing, you know, or some sort of deterrent, you know, on individual properties, you know, is that, you know, a sufficient solution? Is some form of population control in specific locations, you know, is that an appropriate response, you know, to whatever the situation may be? Or is population control throughout the entire area, you know, something that you know, is needed to resolve the issue? And so kind of the ultimate goal is to minimize the damage without eliminating the source of the damage. You know, there's basically no situation where you're going to eliminate all the deer, you know, and in most cases you're not going to want to. So we want to try to come up with solutions where we can minimize the damage, minimize the problem without eliminating the source of it. And so how do we do that? So throughout most of the state of Illinois, hunting is the primary management tool that's used to manage deer populations. That can be difficult, you know, as I mentioned before, in urban areas, although there are urban areas that have, you know, controlled archery hunts to help, you know, manage the deer in their situations. We can also look at non-lethal management options. And so I'm going to go in detail here on the next slide into some of those specific non-lethal management options that homeowners can implement on their own to reduce damage that they may be experiencing. And so those management methods include things like habitat modification, exclusion such as fencing, various repellents and deterrents, and home remedies. And then in certain situations, the DNR, you know, will issue special deer control permits in urban areas where the situation warrants it. And so some basic things that homeowners can do to limit issues associated with deer on their properties. First and foremost is to never feed deer. Don't intentionally feed them. One, it's illegal to do so in the state of Illinois, but it can also cause, you know, deer to become very acclimated to humans and human presence, which can just lead to, you know, a lot more problems. And as, you know, if you're artificially, you know, feeding deer, you know, then they're also just going to be attracted to that area and consume, you know, all other plants, you know, in that area as well. Bird feeders, you know, can be an attractant as well. And so there are times when it might be best to, you know, take those bird feeders down or to cover them, especially at night, if that's primarily when deer are coming around, to prevent access to the feeders by deer. When we look at things that deer will eat, you know, planting landscape plants that are generally not preferred by deer will help. Ultimately, deer will eat anything if they're hungry enough, or, you know, if food is limited enough. But in most situations, you know, planting, you know, certain plants that are generally, you know, thorny or fibrous, you know, can help to at least reduce the amount of damage that folks may be experiencing to their plants. There's a lot of lists out there that provide some detailed information about plants that are not preferred by deer. One of them that we refer to often is on the Morton Arboretum website. I'll provide the link to that later on at the end of the presentation. Exclusion is one of the most effective ways to reduce damage caused by deer. And so often this is either in the form of fencing or some other protective wrap around individual trees. In order to, you know, keep deer completely off of one's property, oftentimes a fence of at least 8 feet is required because deer can jump very high. In urban situations, putting up an 8-foot fence around your property is usually restricted by zoning ordinances. So that depends on the municipality where you live and what's allowed in terms of fencing. But in smaller, more localized applications, such as maybe a vegetable garden or a flower garden, you know, fencing is very effective. You know, typically you still need something, you know, 6 feet tall. You know, but for, you know, a small vegetable garden, you know, that's very feasible to do, relatively low cost, and can be effective for a long period of time. Individual trees or shrubs or plants can be protected with, you know, smaller, you know, cages, you know, smaller wire fencing around individual trees. There are also a wide variety of tree wraps, you know, that can protect, especially, you know, young trees from being rubbed by bucks when they're working to get the velvet off their antlers. Primarily in the wintertime is when, you know, things like arborvitae and yews, you know, are consumed by deer. And so, you know, during those times of the year, you know, you may choose to put some sort of netting or burlap around those. You know, it's not always the prettiest, but for seasonally, you know, to be able to protect them, you know, when needed, you know, is an effective way to reduce deer browsing on those. There's a whole host of different types of repellents on the market. Some are effective, some aren't. The pictures that you see on this screen are of some of the more effective ones that have been shown to be more effective in various research studies that have been conducted. Their effectiveness is variable. So a lot of it depends on the local deer density, the availability of alternative plant foods. And so, they can be, applying them can become expensive because you have to do it on a regular basis. A lot of these repellents can, wash off after the rain. And so especially like right now where we're getting rain, almost every day, you have to regularly apply them. They are most effective when they're applied before damage even starts. So if you have deer in an area and you've got, spring flowers coming up, it's best to begin applying, the repellents before you even have deer, consuming them. So then, again, that kind of ties into the cost associated with it, because then it's kind of a gamble. I'm going to start applying repellents, but what if deer never come, as expected? Then you're applying them needlessly. And so again, with most of these, there are situations where they can be very effective. Sometimes, the application just needs to be done seasonally for a short period of time. There's no one-size-fits-all approach. It depends on the individual situation or the individual property where damage is occurring. You can also go on the internet and find all sorts of different deterrents. There's motion-activated sprinklers that'll shoot a stream of water at a deer or any other animal or a human when it detects motion. There are shocking devices that you can place around your yard, and there's a little attractant in them, so deer will come up to them and get an electric zap, which can serve to deter them from the area. There's ultrasonic devices, that are marketed, to repel deer. And generally, very little research has been done looking at the effectiveness of these. Most of the effectiveness that is attributed to them is anecdotal, and so they can be effective in some situations, but they're not always very reliable, and especially since most of them depend on batteries, that can even further reduce their reliability. I'm going to touch on a few home remedies. You can go on the internet and find hundreds of different, options that you can implement on your own to reduce damage from deer. Again, these are generally not effective long-term. They may provide a short window of protection in a limited area. Folks use things like deodorant soap, hanging that or staking that around their gardens. In some situations, it has worked and it can work. But oftentimes, deer they adapt to it really quickly and realize that it's really no threat to them. Things like, human hair and bone meal and blood meal, spread throughout your garden areas or your property, those two have limited effectiveness, but they can work for short periods of time. So a lot of it just depends on the situation, that you may be experiencing. And so with that, my contact information is up on the screen. So, afterwards, if you have additional questions that come up or have questions about your specific situation, feel free to contact me.
So Tim, I think the major question, if I have to guess in this room, is, okay, we heard all of the natural kind of repellents and home remedies, but what plans, and you mentioned it earlier about the municipalities, other urban municipalities that have taken archery, and probably hunting, other ways to reduce deer. I mean, mm-hmm. could you talk a little bit about what you know of that?
Certainly. So in urban settings, and I'll just really quickly, while during the question and answer period, there's going to be some screens looping through on the or some slides looping through on the screen that are going to give some resources and some websites that you can go to for additional information. as well as some tips for avoiding conflicts with coyotes and raccoons and skunks. So in terms of like population control methods that folks are using in various urban areas, essentially there's three options. One is having a regulated or controlled archery hunt. There are entities not in the Chicago area that are implementing that, but in Western Illinois and parts of Southern Illinois, there are municipalities that have regulated archery hunting. That is a program that does not need to be permitted through the state of Illinois, through the Department of Natural Resources. That is, because of the existing regulations that the DNR has for deer hunting, as long as those municipalities are abiding by the state regulations, they can implement a program like that on their own. The other two are the special population control permits that I referred to briefly. So we have two types of special deer control permits. One is called a deer removal permit. That is a special permit that's issued to basically help individual landowners with issues, damage that deer are causing. Most frequently, those permits are issued in agricultural areas for farmers that are having experiencing damage to their corn crops or soybeans or orchards or nurseries, things like that. Those are permits that are issued at the time that damage is occurring. So oftentimes, during the growing season for the crops. They're issued for a maximum of 30 days and a maximum of 10 deer. Those permits are not intended to control the population. They're just intended to reduce damage at the time that it's occurring. The other special deer control permit that we issue is called the deer population control permit. And that's the type of permit that the majority of municipalities that currently operate under, that currently perform some sort of deer control up here in Northeast Illinois, and there's some other areas throughout the state where folks operate under those types of permits. Those permits are specifically for population control. They're issued primarily during the months of November through March. We issue them at that time of year because under that program, any deer removed through those programs, the meat has to be donated to food pantries. And so during that time of year, the temperatures are cooler, and so the meat can be sustained longer, before it gets to the processor and into a freezer. There's a substantial process associated with those types of permits. The entity that wants to do some sort of deer control under that type of permit, has to document the type of damage that's occurring. In municipalities, it's often documenting deer vehicle accidents and showing an increasing trend in deer vehicle accidents, or a level that's not tolerable by the community. It can involve damage to residential landscaping, commercial landscaping. It can include concerns about Lyme disease, or other tick-borne diseases, although that's a little bit more difficult to quantify, because as part of the process, the entity has to submit an application to my office. They have to identify specific objectives that they want to achieve, and set quantifiable goals associated with those objectives. There has to be a justification for how many deer they desire to remove. There is no limit on the number of deer that can be removed, but the number has to be justified. Through that, typically, the majority of entities, basically either contract with or utilize their own staff as sharpshooters. They have to go through a qualification process that I administer. That involves, a sharpshooting shooting proficiency test, an interview, and there's an application to fill out. any areas that are selected for shooting have to be approved through my office. And so, you know, I would come out and do a site visit, and we would identify, you know, specific locations that are safe for discharging firearms. There's every now and then, you know, folks, there is an entity that utilizes a live trapping and euthanization, you know, method that's a lot more intense, oftentimes a lot more costly and not as effective, but that's an option that some folks use as well. You know, and so then, you know, I mean, I don't know that now's the best time to get into details about how all of that looks, but I'd be happy to take additional questions.
We can take additional questions, although I know that Jonathan and Eric have been working with IDNR and as well as the Forest Preserve and U.S. Department of Agriculture in terms of creating what would this look like if we chose as a board to do, you know, deer maintenance program. So if you want, we can have Eric and Jonathan kind of talk to you all about the things that they've already kind of have done up to this point, and then we can kind of open it up and say, is this what we want to do as a community? Okay. So.
Good evening, everyone.
Yeah,
what, hi.
Is it?
It's me.
Yeah, go ahead.
I just wondered if you have any idea how many deer were in Thatcher Woods, rough estimate.
Okay. Many, yeah. That's a good question, and I think we'll address that because that we need to know that question if we choose to go through this program.
So good evening, everyone. My name is Eric Palm. I'm the village administrator, so I report to the village president and the board of trustees. So I probably talked to you or met many of you in the past, but if you haven't, that's who I am, chief bureaucrat here. So so a couple months ago, the village staff, myself, and John, who works in my office, started having conversations both with the IDNR and the Cook County Forest Reserve District. So one of the challenges River Forest has in doing a deer maintenance or culling program is that we don't have any municipal property where we can have that program on our own. So sometimes you'll hear stories of, well, the village of Glencoe did this or the village of Northbrook did that. They've done that on their own property, typically on a municipal golf course. So where that makes it a little bit more challenging for River Forest is we have to partner with the Cook County Forest Preserve District. So we've started having those conversations with the Forest Preserve District about doing a deer maintenance or a management program on Forest Preserve property. And so the area we're primarily looking at is mostly north of Chicago, south of North Avenue, right in that area of the Forest Preserves. And so what they have to do, they have their own general deer maintenance that they carry out throughout the Forest Preserve District of Cook County, which is obviously very big and very vast. And what we've told them is we would like them to now look at River Forest as well. And so what they have to do is go out and do surveys. How they do them is they'll have people come out, sometimes they use technology, and they'll start to do a count of how many deer they believe are in this particular area. And so they're actually starting that process now. They're actually working on that as we speak. Well, the deer all live.
They all go back.
Yeah. So, all right. So let me. I know you all have strong opinions on this. Let me finish my bit here, and you guys can go after that. So, anyhow, the Forest Reserve District is in the process of counting the deer. Should an application go forward to manage or cull the deer, the application is actually from the Forest Preserve District. They're the ones that would ultimately be responsible for that, and then they will hire a contractor. Many times it's the U.S. Department of Agriculture, which has licensed sharpshooters that work sometimes at O'Hare or have been pre-approved by the IDNR to come out and go ahead and do what they have to do to manage the population. But it's difficult to tell you how many are out there exactly right now because we don't know, and the Forest Reserve District is doing that. And then ultimately what they will do is they'll take that number and they'll go back to the IDNR and say, okay, based on our research and expertise, we believe this is how many deer we should try to manage here in the culling season, which usually starts around December 1st and ends through March 31st. So what we'd be looking to do and where the village would come on board is we would have ultimately an intergovernmental agreement with the Forest Preserve District to basically do a deer management program. The village would contribute financially to that program The exact amount, I don't know at this point. Our research has indicated it's roughly about $1,000 a deer on average to cull that deer. So that you need, well, here, look, you need licensed sharpshooters, people who are pre-approved by the IDNR. You can't just have, you know, any guy off the, you know, back of the street doing this. We are in an urban area, so we have to also exercise some safety, obviously, when we do this, right? And so those are all important factors that we ultimately have to take into consideration. The other thing I would let everyone know that this is a multi-year program. So this is not something that ultimately we're going to handle and particularly accomplish all in that first year, because as we've learned tonight, as you all well know, the deer do like to populate. And so this will be a program that we'll enter, I envision, should the board enter into that intergovernmental agreement, would be a multi-year, multifaceted program. So that's where we're at right now. The county's going out doing their due diligence. They're doing the counting that needs to take place. They're going to come back and give us that information. At that point, we would work on putting together an intergovernmental agreement that would spell out all those particulars in terms of cost and other things that we normally would do in an intergovernmental agreement. And then should the board approve that, the Forest Reserve District Board, which is also your county board, they act in a dual role. That work would take place this winter. So the earliest that the IDNR typically will allow the program to take place is in the winter, and that starts, my understanding is December 1st through March 31st.
Yeah, we do permit some programs as early as November 1st.
Oh, okay.
But the Forest Reserve District of Cook County generally does not start theirs until December 1st.
Mm-hmm. Right. Would that be this
winter? Yes.
Yes.
Generally speaking, we're looking at the Forest Reserves from Lake to North Avenue. Probably more, it's going to be more from Chicago, but, you know, they do have a tendency to move a little bit. But as Tim pointed out, you know, one of the things we learned early on is, you know, the Elmwood Park deer aren't going to come to River Forest, right? And not to be
better schools.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, better schools.
Like a Rosemont deer or a Park Ridge deer in that Forest Reserve in the Des Plaines watershed is not going to come down. The deer that are in and around Chicago Avenue at Thatcher in that area by Thatcher Woods, those deer are primarily going to stay put. Well, obviously they migrate into your backyard, but then they're going to go back into. Right, and so that's where we're going to rely on the Forest Preserve District to advise us as well and give us some expertise on where, and we have to start somewhere. So the idea is most of the, certainly there's concerns everywhere. I would say a high level of the concentration of complaints seem to be coming from, that we've received from the central part of town.
Yeah, we'll look at all.
But we'll look at it, absolutely.
Yeah, go ahead. Right here.
Okay, are there any other means of controlling birth control, salt licks, and actually moving them.
Yeah, when I was in public administration school, they skipped over deer contraception. But I don't know. I'm gonna let Tim handle
it.
I may learn something tonight. I don't know.
Good chapter. Tim, would you answer that? Let Tim answer.
So, there are a number of different deer control options that are promoted in different situations. And when I say promoted, I don't mean by the DNR. So you can look at things like, you know, translocating deer, which a number of entities, you know, back in the 1980s when, you know, deer issues were really kind of coming on the scene, you know, and there was a lot of controversy at that time associated with some of the early deer management programs that were planning to use sharpshooting. You know, they did look at translocating deer. Currently, translocating deer is not allowed to other parts of the state because of chronic wasting disease concerns and spreading disease from one location to another. But when you look at translocation just by itself, there's a lot of risks to the deer associated with that. And so in terms of effects on the deer, deer are very susceptible to what's called capture myopathy. Basically, they become so stressed in the capture and translocation process that they die. And so in some of those early programs, about 50% of the deer that were being translocated died as a result of the capture and translocation process. From the, you know, sort of more administrative aspect of things, trapping and translocating deer requires a lot more effort. It requires specialized equipment. It requires highly trained personnel. Not that sharpshooting doesn't, but different. And so the costs and the effort to capture deer is much greater. And so the costs associated with those types of programs is generally much higher. There's also, you know, fertility control that can take various forms. There's surgical sterilization, which generally involves the live capture of deer, bringing them into either some sort of veterinary clinic or some sort of mobile veterinary, you know, ambulance, and then surgically, essentially either removing their ovaries through an ovariectomy, or another process called tubal ligation. That is also a very stressful process for deer. It also requires, you know, again, the live capture of deer. So there's also the stress associated with that, and because of, again, needing basically even more trained personnel to basically conduct surgeries on deer, it can be very costly. Now, some entities, you know, we don't permit those programs here in Illinois because they have not been shown to be effective on free roaming populations. In closed populations where, you know, maybe like an arboretum that is fenced, you know, then some of the fertility control options, and I'll talk about a couple of the other ones here, they can be more effective. But where you have deer that are, you know, it's an open population, you have deer immigrating and emigrating, you know, typically they're not effective. Beyond that, you have to be able to capture and sterilize generally over 80% of the females, which becomes well, that's
the
one.
Question the, was the is there a way pharmaceutically to do it?
Pharmaceutically, there are immunocontraceptives that, you know, have been studied, similar to surgical sterilization. You know, you need to capture and you know, inject, you know, the contraceptive into, you know, generally at least 80% of the female deer. It's logistically very difficult. Again, very costly to do that because there's only one registered immunocontraceptive called Gonicon that can currently be used, that's approved by the EPA, and that can, in Illinois, that can only be used in an experimental research sense. It can't be used for actual management. So again, the DNR would not permit any programs utilizing those because they haven't been shown to be effective in the situations that we're dealing with here. Any entity wanting to use some sort of, you know, fertility control, sterilization, would have to do it under a research permit.
The question is the deer tend to come out of the forest when it floods? Is there a better way of maintaining the forest preserve? That's what she's. I'm just repeating your question so everyone can hear it.
Okay. Is there something why? So. You know, I mean, we've lived here for over 30 years, and this has only happened in the last few 2 years ago. Why is it complained about the problem? When I first called the forest, and no one knew anything. Yep.
Mm. Well, he's here now. So Tim's here now, and probably IDNR probably didn't get a call from here. Who knows where that all got messed up? But
yeah.
So Tim, the question is a good one. Is there a way to modify the way the forest preserve functions. I don't know how you do that with the water rising, but it's a question. So,
I mean,
I got it.
So certainly, you know, deer move, you know, based upon changes in their habitat. So if food is limited, you know, they'll move out, such as, you know, during an extreme weather event, you know, or, you know, extreme winter, you know, they may move into, you know, the more residential areas where there's other food availability. When there's a flood, you know, that's going to take away some of their habitat. And so they're going to have to adjust their movements to accommodate for that. You know, in terms of, you know, what can be done, I mean, that's more of a conversation to be had with the Forest Preserve District, you know, if there are ways that they can, you know, if they have areas that they have the ability to use to mitigate flooding.
But in your professional
but primarily, oftentimes the forest preserves serve as sort of protection, right, you know, during flood events, you know, where, I mean, if, you know, if the forest preserve wasn't there, you know, the residential area would be getting flooded. I don't know if you guys experienced that anyways, mm-hmm. but...
Don't answer.
But...
That's another third rail.
But oftentimes, I mean, the forest preserves are there to provide, you know, I mean, one of the benefits of them is that they provide, you know, flood control.
Okay. So, Dave, you got a question?
Yeah, speaking of the volume of the property, my wife and I have lived at the intersection of Keystone and Oak now for 19 and a half years, and we've seen a dramatic increase over the last several years.
Yes.
As an example, we have seen 11 deer at one time on our property or on Oak Street. Now, the majority of the time this occurs either at sunrise or sunset. However, since I'm now retired, I have chased deer off of our property in the middle of the day.
Yeah.
As an indication of the volume, and while this is a somewhat distasteful concept, early this March, my wife and I went through our property to remove the deer droppings. And we collected approximately a gallon. Now, if you consider what one deer produces, that is a staggering amount.
Yeah.
And from our perspective, there really is only one solution, and that is a culling. We know people who have been licensed. I have a friend who's been a licensed bow hunter in four states and has culled deer for 35 years. Yeah. With a bow hunter, you have no issues with ricochets. You have no issues with the discharge of firearms. It's considered to be safer, and it's more effective if, in fact, someone is skilled. But something has to be done. Because
and you're addressing the right, I think you're addressing the right board, Dave. Trustee Bachner wants to say a word.
Yeah, I just had a question in terms of the culling. And you mentioned the chronic waste disease in some deer. And you also mentioned providing the venison to local. My question is, would it be provided to hyper-local pantries so people in our area could use that? I think that would make a lot of sense for us. And then also chronic waste disease, how do you determine then if the deer has that before providing it?
So far, chronic wasting disease has not been identified in Cook County. So that's a really good thing. In areas where, chronic wasting disease is known to occur, and there are portions where we work with the Forest Preserve District of Cook County in their deer removal programs and require them to collect samples from their deer to test for chronic wasting disease. There is no live test that can be done, with any sort of reliability at this point. When deer are removed through these programs, those that are implementing them are required to, if depending on the situation, they're required to collect tissue samples, which is basically two lymph nodes and the brain stem. Those get submitted to a lab at the University of Illinois, where they, prepare the samples and determine whether or not they have chronic wasting disease.
Of the deer, you can.
Yes.
Every deer. That's
I mean, in terms of, there are some programs here in Cook County where we don't require them to collect samples to test for chronic wasting disease because it hasn't been known to occur there, and we have other surveillance going on nearby. So, like some of the programs that they may be taking, 10 deer, and it's in an area where CWD has not been known to occur, we haven't had deer, samples collected in those situations. You know, some of the younger deer, you know, they're not, CWD is difficult to detect in them at a young age. And so sometimes we request just samples from yearling and older deer. Okay.
So we've got a few questions I want to get to.
And in terms of just the food pantry donations, the entity that's implementing the program, you know, has to identify what food pantries they want the venison to go to.
Thank you.
So you would have to contract with a processor to have the deer processed and then make arrangements with, you know, I mean, some folks just use the Northern Illinois Food Bank. Others select, you know, specific food pantries in their communities to benefit from
so
that.
So, Carol, hang on 1 minute. I know we got three or four. Trustee McConnell's got
so,
a question.
So do you know, just off the top of your head, Cook County, just generally speaking, over the past 5 years, how many have they taken out? Do you have a record of that?
I have a record of that. I don't have it right here.
Okay. On an annual basis, what do you think?
Tricky question.
Throughout Cook County, you know, I mean, on average, roughly, you know, 400 deer.
Okay, good.
400.
Yeah.
So that's a significant amount. I mean, not right.
Now,
doesn't
now,
take care of the problem.
Now, keep in mind, that's throughout the county. Right. It's not
It's not rural forest.
Right.
Although we probably have 400 here. Okay, Nurse Carol. Go ahead, Carol.
Okay, you said that we don't have racing disease. I had a deer living in my backyard last March who had all the symptoms of racing disease. I Googled it, my neighbor Googled it. It had, first of all, I noticed it's deer living back there drinking a lot of water out of my bird bath. And that's one of the symptoms, excessive thirst. Secondly, it walking with its head down, it could hardly walk. Thirdly, you could see the wasting in her body, and so I didn't know what to do, and so after several days, I called the village, and they said, well, the woman answered phone, said, I don't know, we'll send the police. The forest police came over, and this year, my neighbor came out when she saw the police, they said, oh, what happened to Carol, and I said, what's this deer, and so I said, this deer was obviously in the terminal stages of wasting disease, and this deer needed to be put to sleep. Mm-hmm. It was a humane, as a former nurse or retired nurse, I have all the empathy for people suffering, right, as is everyone in this room. That deer was suffering. The policeman said, well, we can't do anything. So I said, well, I don't know what to do. So I called Kathy.
I got my sharpshooter out. I said, we can take you.
No, I don't know what
I got
do.
This.
Go to the forest preserve.
Yeah.
I went over to the forest preserves on Harlem, and they said, we can't do anything. We don't know what to do.
Yeah.
So they said, well, call. Here's John Anderson's
name.
And so I called him and talked to him.
And so, Carol, this is why we're here now. We're kind of circling the wagons trying to get this thing solved. John, we've already disciplined John.
But my point is, this deer had often wasting disease.
Yeah.
Finally,
yeah.
You know, nothing. There has to be some policy that we have because that's as you know, that is something that's contagious.
Yeah, and maybe that's something we should take up with.
Well, and I need to jump in here for a moment because I understand that deer was certainly sick. You cannot guarantee that it had chronic wasting disease.
So there
are a number of other diseases and ailments to deer that can have the same types of symptoms. And so, I mean, if anyone ever observes a deer like that, you know, write down my contact information or see me after the meeting.
We'll get it out on our website.
So you can call me and we can have somebody respond.
So let's just take a few more questions because we also have a board meeting.
Well, so
I mean,
what would happen?
If that's where the deer is, I mean, so the situation, you know, can vary. You know, one, if it's a residential area, so discharging firearms is a difficult thing because of safety concerns,
and so
oftentimes, you know, oftentimes law enforcement has the authority to dispatch a deer in those types of situations, or if it's been, you know, injured in a deer vehicle accident. Law enforcement has the authority to do that. If it's a situation where, you know, the local law enforcement does not want to do that, you know, we can contact our conservation police officers, and they can come out. Again, they're going to assess the situation and determine whether or not it's safe to discharge a firearm to euthanize that deer. You know, but you know, in the event that it does get euthanized, or you know, it dies on its own, then you know, a representative from the DNR would more than willing to collect a tissue sample so that we can test it for chronic wasting disease to know whether or not that is here.
So we're going to take, Carol, let's take a couple of other questions. Go ahead.
So it sounds to me like John and Eric are totally on this.
Yeah.
And Kathy, which is great.
Right.
So the only question I would have is, there's obviously a lot of energy here and there's some data like this chronic wasting. Can that be channeled towards whatever data collection the Forest Preserve is doing?
Yeah. Along with the IDNR, I mean, Tim just said, like, in these.
It's all sort of anecdotal, but.
Yeah, right.
So,
if you opened up and said you want comments from people and you got like deluged with comments, then maybe IDNR would say, oh, I guess there is a problem.
Yeah.
I don't know how the data collection works.
Okay, so one, I'm not saying that there's not a problem, but it's not up to me to determine whether there is one. So the municipality. Yeah. You know, it's basically up to you all, you know, and the residents of the community to determine whether or not the issues that you're experiencing with deer are acceptable. And so, you know, as you move forward, you know, with discussions with the Forest Preserve District of Cook County, you know, given that they would have to submit an application to my office that I would review to determine whether or not, you know, deer removals are warranted. I would hope that they include, yeah, you know, information from the municipality.
Well, John just said that. So, John, to answer your question, the
county would apply on our behalf, but we would support that application with complaints from residents.
And data.
Which would go with the county's data all wrapped together to the IDNR for them to be able to issue that permit.
So the county's board commissioner, yeah, robust.
Yeah. So let's get a couple. I know the gentleman back there. Go ahead.
Quick. Thanks for your time. Do we have any opportunities to focus hunting during normal hunting seasons in the areas that would affect the populations in our village?
So, hunting.
Can complete the question?
Yeah, I didn't hear it.
The gentleman asked if there were opportunities to focus hunting within the village of River Forest to help.
I think he's asking outside of River Forest, yeah, that affect River
areas
Forest.
That would affect the population,
right,
in our area.
So are there wildlife areas either north or south that along the river where people can hunt and eventually help?
So, you know, I don't have a knowledge of every area adjacent to the village of River Forest that may allow hunting. You know, if there's an unincorporated area, you know, adjacent to the village where, you know, hunting is legal, you know, then, you know, I mean, certainly that can help. But, you know, depending on where that property is located in relation to where the, you know, main issues that the village is experiencing, you know, it may, you know, and how many deer might be removed through, you know, through the normal hunting season, okay, you know, it may or may not have any effect.
You might want,
you know,
to
certainly,
say,
you know, I mean, if there were areas, you know, in the village, you know, that could be opened up to hunting, you know.
Okay.
Yeah, the short answer really is no, right? Yeah, and so the challenge we have, right, is that, unlike like Glencoe or Northbrook, where they've got a municipal golf course, then go on the golf course. We don't have that. So really, it's really the Forest Preserve District or nothing. And you can't go, if I went to the Oak Park Country Club, that's too far north. I'd be solving Elmwood Park's problem, not ours.
Okay, real quick, let's
take
Kim. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. I just want to say, I mean, I really believe, and this is profoundly, because it's affected my family and several of our friends. River Forest has an epidemic, and the epidemic is bacteria and parasite tick-borne diseases.
Yeah.
That is the issue. Okay. That's the issue of why I'm here. I mean, I know there's other issues, but that is the primary issue why I'm here. I want to encourage you all to definitely explore population control.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, so.
Ticks.
Yeah. And in fact, that's what I was.
Ticks cannot. Yep. Yep. Reproduce if they do not have a host.
All right. So that's what I was going to ask. I mean, we can, but with maybe a show of hands, I mean, what Eric and John talked about, you know, they are pursuing that, okay? And if we do, as a board, agree to it, which if we see a good portion of hands here, then it sounds like that's what the residents want, is us to pursue it. So I can get a show of hands of saying that we should look at a deer population control. I need to know. Okay, would you say that's 90%?
That appears to be the majority, correct.
Okay. So we all agree.
Yeah. I can say that I heard a comment about doing it partially. So I would say we all know it's a problem.
Right.
Let's try and get rid of as many as possible.
Right.
Otherwise, it's going to be expensive now.
Yeah.
Otherwise, we'll be back here 5 years later doing the same thing. And at $1,000 a throw for one, that's an expensive night for a couple of deers to have.
Yeah.
So.
Well, we'll come back to you guys on the plan because, but you're right. We want to get this thing not only right, but it should be maintained over.
Yeah,
years.
And as I mentioned earlier, I don't know if you were here when we made the comment. It's a multi-year approach.
Yeah,
so they'll try to do as much as they can this year, but they're going to populate again. So this is going to be
an annual. Go ahead. Not to my knowledge.
To the best of my knowledge, no. I never say ever, never, ever, never. But I've been here 8 years. We never had one, or in the 8-9 years I've been here. And anecdotally, we can't find any files on it, so.
No.
Yeah, I had asked about it when I first moved in.
Now,
I'll get you.
It's always possible the Forest Preserve District could have done something on their own without our knowledge, but not the village would not have.
We never did anything.
To our knowledge, no.
Okay, the lady, yeah, please. Yeah, and no, I don't think that we need to. I mean, it sounds like, John, you want to answer that?
Forest Preserve's on board with the village's support, so they have limited resources, which is why they'd asked for us to partner with them, but they're absolutely on board with the program.
Yeah, and Illinois, your department, DNR, is on board. So we will come to you guys if we see we need help. Go ahead.
Tim, thanks for the presentation.
Yeah, round of applause for Tim. Right.
In short, yes.
Regretfully.
So here's the question.
Okay, one guess.
You got a little, he called it a little deer. Fawns.
Yes.
Thank you. They're running around by the killing season. Are they ready to be motherless?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah. Real quick.
Okay.
If we do the culling between Chicago and North, will the population to the south of that then migrate into that area that's now been depopulated or less populated?
Every situation can be a little bit different, but generally, no. Generally, you know, they form their home ranges and you know they stick to it. Now, as reproduction, you know, say in a population to the south continues, they may gradually start to expand, but you are not likely to see this influx of deer into that void.
Let me talk to that real quick, just from our conversations with the county. The whole thing will be assessed, you know, the whole stretch of the village. Our preliminary conversations with the county lead us to believe that those areas that we talked about, the Chicago to North Avenue, are going to be the most effective, and so that's where we discuss starting. But again, they're doing those body counts right now, and we'll come back to the exact
point. All right,
point.
Very good. Thank you all for coming here. I hope this was informative. Awesome. And now on to our next meeting.
I need a motion to adjourn, Kathy.
I move that we adjourn.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Thank you.